Robert got into the habit of working all night and then sleeping through a good part of the day.
Göttingen's damp weather and poorly heated buildings wreaked havoc on his delicate constitution.
He walked around with a chronic cough, which friends attributed to either his frequent colds or his chain smoking.
But in other respects, life in Göttingen was pleasantly bucolic.
As Hans Bethe later observed of this golden age in theoretical physics,
life at the centers of the development of quantum theory, Copenhagen and Göttingen, was idyllic and leisurely, in spite of the enormous amount of work accomplished.
Oppenheimer invariably sought out those young men with growing reputations. Others could not help but feel they had been snubbed. He, Oppenheimer, and Born became very close friends, Edward Condon said rather peevishly years later, and saw a great deal of each other, so much so that Born did not see much of the other theoretical physics students who had come there to work with him.
Heisenberg passed through Göttingen that year, and Robert made a point of meeting the brightest of Germany's young physicists.
Just 3 years older than Oppenheimer, Heisenberg was articulate, charming, and tenacious in argument with his peers. Both men possessed original intellects and knew it. The son of a professor of Greek, Heisenberg had studied with Wolfgang Pauli at the University of Munich, and later he had done postdoctoral work with both Bohr and Born. Like Oppenheimer, Heisenberg had a way of using his intuition to cut to the root of a problem. He was an oddly charismatic young man whose sparkling intellect commanded attention. By all accounts, Oppenheimer admired Heisenberg and respected his work. He could not have known that in the years ahead they would become shadowy rivals. Oppenheimer would one day find himself contemplating Heisenberg's loyalty to wartime Germany and wondering whether the man was capable of building an atomic bomb for Adolf Hitler. But in 1927, he was building on Heisenberg's discoveries in quantum mechanics. That spring, prompted by a remark from Heisenberg, Robert became interested in using the new quantum theory to explain, as he put it, why molecules were molecules. In very short order, he found a simple solution to the problem. When he showed Professor Born his notes, the older man was startled and very pleased. They then agreed to collaborate on a paper, and Robert promised that while he was in Paris for Easter, he would write up his notes into a first draft. But Born was horrified when he received from Paris a very spare 4- or 5-page paper. "I thought that this was about right," Oppenheimer recalled. "It was very light of touch, and it seemed to me all that was necessary." Born eventually lengthened the paper to 30 pages, padding it, Robert thought, with unnecessary or obvious theorems. "I didn't like it, but it was obviously not possible for me to protest to a senior author." For Oppenheimer, the central new idea was everything. The context and the academic window dressing were clutter that disturbed his acute aesthetic sense. On the Quantum Theory of Molecules was published later that year. This joint paper containing the Born-Oppenheimer approximation, in reality just the Oppenheimer approximation, is still regarded as a significant breakthrough in using quantum mechanics to understand the behavior of molecules. Oppenheimer had recognized that the lighter electrons in molecules travel with a much greater speed than the heavier nuclei. By integrating out the higher frequency electron motions, he and Born were then able to calculate the effective wave mechanical phenomena of nuclear vibrations. The paper laid the foundation for developments more than 7 decades later in high-energy physics. Late that spring, Robert submitted his doctoral thesis, the heart of which contained a complicated calculation for the photoelectric effect in hydrogen and X-rays. Born recommended that it be accepted with distinction. The one fault he noted was that the paper was difficult to read. Nevertheless, Born recorded that Oppenheimer had written a complicated paper and he did it very well. Years later, Hans Bethe, another Nobel laureate, observed that in 1926, Oppenheimer had to develop all the methods himself, including the normalization of wave functions in the continuum. Naturally, his calculations were later improved upon, but he correctly obtained the absorption coefficient at the K-edge and the frequency dependence in its neighborhood. Bethe concluded, "Even today, this is a complicated calculation, beyond the scope of most quantum mechanics textbooks." A year later, in a related field, Oppenheimer published the first paper to describe the phenomenon of quantum mechanical tunneling, whereby particles literally are able to tunnel through a barrier. Both papers were formidable achievements. On May 11, 1927, Robert sat down for his oral examination and emerged a few hours later with excellent grades. Afterwards, one of his examiners, the physicist James Franck, told a colleague, "I got out of there just in time. He was beginning to ask me questions." At the last moment, the university's authorities discovered to their indignation that Oppenheimer had failed to register formally as a student, and so they threatened to withhold his degree.
He was finally awarded his doctorate only after Born interceded and falsely told the Prussian Ministry of Education that economic circumstances render it impossible for Herr Oppenheimer to remain in Göttingen after the end of the summer term. That June, Professor Edwin Kemble happened to be visiting Göttingen and soon wrote a colleague,
"Oppenheimer is turning out to be even more brilliant than we thought when we had him at Harvard. He is turning out new work very rapidly and is able to hold his own with any of the galaxy of young mathematical physicists here." Curiously, the professor added, "Unfortunately, Born tells me that he has the same difficulty about expressing himself clearly in writing which we observed at Harvard." Oppenheimer had long since become an extremely expressive writer, but it was also true that his physics papers were usually brief to the point of being cursory. Kemble thought Robert's command of language was indeed remarkable, but that he became two different people when talking about physics and about any other general topic. Born was disheartened to see Oppenheimer depart. "It's all right for you to leave, but I cannot," he told him. "You have left me too much homework."
A parting gift from Robert to his mentor was a valuable edition of Lagrange's classic text, Mécanique Analytique.
Decades later, long after he had been forced to flee Germany, Born wrote Oppenheimer, "This book has survived all upheavals, revolution, war, emigration, and return, and I am glad that it is still in my library, for it represents very well your attitude to science, which comprehends it as a part of the general intellectual development in the course of human history." By then, Oppenheimer had long eclipsed Born in notoriety, although not in scientific achievement.
Göttingen was the scene of Oppenheimer's first real triumph as a young man coming of age.
"Becoming a scientist," Oppenheimer later remarked, "is like climbing a mountain in a tunnel. You wouldn't know whether you were coming out above the valley or whether you were coming out at all." This was particularly so for a young scientist on the cusp of the quantum revolution. More of a witness to this upheaval than a participant, he nevertheless demonstrated that he had the raw intellect and motivation to make physics his life's work. In 9 short months, he had combined real academic success with a renewal of his personality and his own sense of worth. The profound emotional inadequacies that only a year before had threatened his very survival had been trumped by serious achievements and the confidence that flowed from them. The world now beckoned.